Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, and usually we have relatively quiet martinis on Fridays, unless it's a job report Friday. Not the case today. We've got good news, bad news, and crazy news, but they are not small stories. Let's start with the good martini, as always. As most of you probably know by now, on Thursday afternoon, it was reported that looks like John McCain, Lindsey Graham, Kelly Ayotte, and company got their way to some extent because ongoing criticism of the administration's forthcomingness on the issue of Benghazi, and specifically the now discredited talking points from UN Ambassador Susan Rice on the Sunday morning chat shows the Sunday after Benghazi, has resulted in this. Susan Rice announcing that she will no longer have her name in consideration to follow Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State.
Today I made the decision that it was the best thing for our country, for the American people, that I not continue to be considered by the president for nomination as Secretary of State, because I didn't want to see a confirmation process that was very prolonged, very politicized, very distracting, and very disruptive.
So a couple of good things here, Jim. First of all, blind loyalty at the sake of the truth to the American people does not get rewarded. And also, the senators who were most critical of Rice say this is a good step, but it's not the end of the story. We still need answers. So their foot is still on the pedal here.
I had said this is actually the best news to happen for Republicans since Election Day. And I guess some folks might quibble and say Michigan's labor law, you know, is a better choice. But I'm just going to observe that, look, this means Benghazi had consequences, not the consequence that we had wanted it to have. There are still enormous amounts of questions about basically three big issues. The first being the decisions made not to provide the additional security that was asked for in the run-up to it. The second issue is what happened that evening, how we responded to the reports of an attack on our people out there. But then the third one was, why were the initial explanations very vague? And then afterwards, they seemed to get more in the wrong direction, until about a week later, they said, yes, this was a terror attack. And then sometime later, the State Department came out and said, no, there never was a protest. There was nothing indicating that this was a protest of a film, etc. You can argue Susan Rice was a pawn in all this, that she is not she went out and recited the talking points that the intelligence had given her, etc. But I don't think, you know, that's fine. And you could, I think a lot of us would argue, no, that full responsibility goes up higher on the ladder. But she still went out and lied to the American people or provided information that was not only false, but implausibly false. Mortar fire is part of a film protest and stuff like that. Susan Rice has had her career ambitions derailed in part. She still may end up being Obama's national security advisor, some other job that does not require Senate confirmation. And you know what? That's fine. You know, I believe the presidents are allowed to have the cabinet that they want. But if she was going to be up nominated for Secretary of State, the country's top diplomat, then she was going to have to be put on the grill over this. And I think if you participate in a lie about life and death matters like this, no, you don't get the promotion. You don't get to be our top diplomat all around the world. So that is good. A consequence is that we get John Kerry, and we can live with that and talk about that later. But this is the first indicator that Obama will not get what he wants all the time. Obama's allies are furious with him over this, fans of Susan Rice. And I think this is kind of an interesting indicator that, look, they can blame this on the Republicans. But in the end, if Obama wanted to force this through, they have 55 Senate Democrats. They could do this. Meaning that there are either some Senate Democrats who were not comfortable with voting for Susan Rice, or Obama just didn't want to spend the political capital. And, you know, folks who are really upset about this really should be looking at Obama and the Senate Democrats and asking why weren't they willing to fight for somebody who they're totally convinced was perfectly qualified and the best choice for the job.
You alluded to our second martini. While it's great that Susan Rice has faced consequences for bald-faced lying to the American people on five different shows on September 16th, her departure from the list of possible Secretary of State nominees means that one name is far and away at the top of the list. And Jim, it's one you know well. John Kerry is reporting for duty.
Indeed I am, Greg. Indeed I am. In fact, by the way, Greg, I don't know if you know this, but I served in Vietnam. I've spent a lot of years since not winning in 2004 working towards this kind of work. probably most proud of my outreach to Bashar Assad, Greg. That's I've met with him 6 times, had dinner with him. He's really seemed like a great guy until he started killing everyone. And then maybe I misjudged that one. Anyway, people will notice it's very – once I start lapsing into John Kerry speak, it's very hard to come out of it. I almost feel possessed or something. But I know it's the bad martini, Greg, but I love it because John Kerry – you know, he's going to be the next Secretary of State. He's going to be in the news all the time for the next 4 years. Now, you're going to ask me, is he going to be a good Secretary of State? Greg, no, he's going to be terrible. He's going to be a walking joke. It's Thurston Howell. He's constantly out of touch. And as I wrote yesterday and wrote during the Democratic convention, on almost every major foreign policy decision that comes down the pike, he gets it wrong. He opposed the first Persian Gulf War, but he voted for the Iraq War resolution in 2002, and then he opposed the surge. He was 0-3, Greg, and he voted for the 87 million. Look, he's going to be utterly, utterly awful. However, I think, you know, as listeners can tell, I have a certain delicious glee. And obviously, look, John Kerry has been very good to me. And so anything that brings out old waffles, the little happy dancing waffle man logo that I get to bring out whenever John Kerry is in the news. Greg, I'm sorry. I can't play along with this anymore. This is the best bad martini ever. I'm thrilled to pieces. We'll have terrible diplomacy for 4 years, but we can deal with that. You know.
Let me move on to martini number 3. Okay. RG3, Robert Griffin III, Heisman Trophy winner 2011, second overall draft pick by the Redskins. Starting quarterback since day one has electrified Skins fans. I will come straight out and say I can't stand the Redskins, but I have enjoyed watching him play. He's fun to watch, and the games are actually more interesting since a lot of times it's the only game on locally. And he just seems to be a very solid citizen, very family-oriented, very moral, and this is a guy that I think a lot of young people can look up to. But apparently, despite the fact that he's a model citizen and a phenomenal athlete and says all the right things to the media, it's not good enough for one Rob Parker, who, at least until very recently, until yesterday, was a commentator on ESPN's First Take in the Morning, which will not add to your brain cells on a regular basis since it features Skip Bayless as well. But the issue yesterday was the issue of RG3 having been asked a couple of different questions this week about being a black quarterback in Washington. And he says, I know that's important to a lot of people, and if I can make them proud, that's great. But I don't define myself by my race. I just want to work really hard and win football games and do the best that I can. And here's Parker's response to all that.
Is he a brother or is he a cornball brother?
Which what does that mean?
Yeah, explain that.
Well, he's not really. Okay, he's black. He kind of does the thing, but he's not really down with the cause. He's not one of us. He's kind of black. He's in the, but he's not really like the guy you really want to hang out with because he's off to something else.
Why is that your question?
Well, because that's just how I want to find out about him. I don't know because I keep hearing these things. We all know he has a white fiance, and there was all this talk about he's a Republican, which there's no information at all. I'm just trying to dig deeper into why he has an issue.
Jim, this is happens every time that somebody doesn't fit the liberal stereotype for what a prominent black person should be. We see it every time a conservative black person enters the public arena, whether it be Clarence Thomas, Alan West, Herman Cain. Everyone gets demonized if they don't pigeonhole to every single ideology of the left, and the fact that he's got a white fiance, and maybe nobody even really seems to know if he votes Republican. Who cares, considering the job that he has?
You point out the demonization that black conservatives get. I think what's kind of fascinating here is this is occurring about a public figure who we really have no indication that he's a conservative at all.
Right.
I mean, you know, he says there's this talk about he's a Republican, which there's no information at all, which Parker says. There are two explanations here. One, I mean, I watch a decent amount of ESPN and quite a bit of their, you know, sports anchors shouting at each other type shows, the around the horns, the pardon the interruptions. I'm not familiar with Parker. He may just be dumb as a fence post, basically. That's the only way to put it, because he goes on to this show. Not only have I never heard the term cornball brother, I don't think anybody, clearly nobody else on that panel had heard of the term. Like he's not even saying is he a Uncle Tom, you know, the usual sneers and slurs and nasty names that African-Americans who are deemed insufficiently black. No, Rob Parker's got to go out and come up with his own term to bring to this discussion. And then secondly, his criteria for not being one of us, as was said, an unconfirmed claim that he's a Republican, which, you know, we don't know who Griffin voted for. I think it's safe to say the moment he donated to a Republican, you'd see, those who watch campaign finance writing about it, that would be a big story. But I think there's anything, you know. So the only way is that there's this rumor he voted Republican. But he has a white fiance, which Rob Parker is asserting ipso facto makes you no longer black. I'm just trying to dig deeper as to why he has an issue. What issue besides playing football really, really well? We should note for listeners, ESPN has announced that they have suspended Parker and they are reviewing the situation. His comments were inappropriate, etc., which is, I think, the appropriate thing for ESPN to do in this circumstance. I don't know if the guy necessarily should lose his job over it. I do kind of think that ESPN and Rob Parker have to analyze, what's he doing there? What is the point of having Parker on a panel like this, and what does he bring to it? Because I'm not really sure how this is a useful way of evaluating our sports figures. Usually it's, you know, should he play because of his ligament this week? Or, you know, is he running the ball too much or something like that? I really don't know if I need an ESPN panel to discuss what makes someone authentically black. I think this was an extremely nasty and unfair thing to do to Robert Griffin III. And I think one of the, you know, we may see a bit of a backlash. We talk about the race card being played. Robert Griffin III is so beloved in Washington that I think Rob Parker is going to be he's going to be public villain number one for, you know, kind of, you know, trying to create a racial controversy over a guy who's doing everything right so far and who's, you know, a great player and so far and a you know, extremely, as you said, solid citizen. For listeners outside the Beltway, there is so much Redskins obsession in this town, good year or bad, that local news crews are right now reporting live from inside Robert Griffin's anterior cruciate ligament. That's how far you are. So Rob Parker may have really stepped in it, and it's kind of nice to see what I think you and I would call is kind of some very, you know, casual off-the-cuff race baiting, kind of getting a, you know, causing a backlash and maybe getting some people to argue that not every topic that comes down the pike needs to have this the issue of race injected into it. And not everybody, you know, like, I'm a white guy. There's probably someone to argue I'm in no position to tell the African-American community how they should debate issues amongst themselves. Let me just observe that, like, who the hell is Rob Parker to decide whether Robert Griffin III is black enough? Who has the authority to be the judge of that? You know, I am skeptical of that. Undoubtedly, someone will probably write in that my assessment of this makes me insufficiently white or something like that, Greg. So as you know, as a guy who's I deem you insufficiently Greek, and I'm sufficiently Irish to make that call. So on that point, I wish everyone to have a good, happy weekend.
I have a dream that one day quarterbacks will be judged not on the color of their skin, but on the content of their ability and character. Jim, have a fabulous
their
weekend.
Their ability to hit the open receiver in play action.
That's right. He's Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Have a great weekend, everyone, and join us again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.